Hi, I'm Nick Gregoriadis, and this is the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Podcast. The show for grapplers and martial artists that want to evolve both on and off the mat.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 4 of the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Podcast. You know, the older I get, the more I'm trying to do things based on gut feel and instinct. And the person that we have as our guest this week is not somebody that I know. I've only had the most brief interaction with him on Facebook. But during those short chats, I just had a feeling that he would make a very good interview guest for the show. And that he'd have some cool stuff to say that would help us all on our respective journeys. So without further ado, I present to you guys Eddie Fivey. Okay, guys, welcome back to the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Podcast, episode 4. I'm speaking to Eddie Fivey, and I'm going to be straight up with you guys. I don't know Eddie very well. We've just had a few interactions on Facebook, but in those short interactions, I just kind of got the impression that he was someone who had something cool to say, and in particular, something cool to say about Jiu-Jitsu. So, Eddie, welcome to the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Podcast. Would you start by just giving us a brief introduction and a little bit of background about yourself?
Sure, yeah. And thanks for having me on, Nick. I really appreciate it. I think you're doing a lot of good work for jiu-jitsu, and I've been following for a long time, so it's an honor to be here. So I've been doing jiu-jitsu for 20 years, and currently I run a jiu-jitsu school in upstate New York, the Eddie Fivey Jiu-Jitsu Academy. And in that 20 years, I've had probably I had 16 professional MMA fights and hundreds of jiu-jitsu matches. And now I'm just really working on contributing back to the art and trying to give back to other people everything that it gave me. So that's the direction I'm moving. And in September, I'll be promoting the Hicks and Gracie Cup Albany, which will be the first tournament of their new series that they've just started.
Okay, that's fantastic. It sounds like you're a lifer.
yeah, no doubt about it. I was from day one. Absolutely. It was definitely something that was kind of meant for me in an intuitive way, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I notice on your, if I'm not mistaken, it's on your Facebook profile, you put your profession as jiu-jitsu consultant, seminars, and something else. The first thing that came to mind when I saw that is that you've gone all in when it comes to using jiu-jitsu as a vehicle for not just your own training and development in the martial arts, but also as the thing that's going to put food on the table. And I think that's, am I correct in saying that?
Yeah, I think that's been a natural order for me in terms of everything I've done. I started when I was 10 years old, and I realized from day one that this is what I was going to do. And I struggled all throughout school because at 12 years old, I knew exactly what I wanted to do, and I would tell everybody what I was going to do. So at this point, as far as, you know, my life and my business, it's, you know, without a doubt, jiu-jitsu. It was a natural progression. But now it's more about, for me, it's, well, teaching and directly influencing people. And then kind of just thinking about what got me to this point, which was seminars and tournaments and also other people mentoring and consulting me. So really, I'm just looking for different ways and different channels to give back.
Okay, cool. I understand. Was jiu-jitsu, is that how you've made your living since you left home?
Yeah. When I graduated high school, I had my first professional fight a couple weeks after, or a couple months after, actually. And I've just been moving ever since. Yeah, nonstop.
That's great. I mean, that in itself is, to me, the indicator of what separates professionals from the guys who are just playing around. Do you have something on the side that's keeping you going, or do you believe enough in what you do that you fully commit to it and use that as or rely on that to put food on the table and get you where you want to go? So I respect that a lot. Could you tell me a little bit about we had a brief chat recently on Facebook Messenger, and something that you said to me stuck with me. I know you're working with Hickson at the moment, and you said to me that Hickson is the most amazing person you've ever met. And those are the exact words you used, which stuck in my mind. I have so much to ask. I'm a huge fan of Hickson's, really a huge fan. I
I think there was a point when I was younger, when I'd just gotten into jiu-jitsu and really dedicated myself to it. Maybe I was like about 20 years old.
Yeah.
And it, I think my my relationship to Hickson was probably a little bit unhealthy in that I'd kind of just left pretty intense organized religion, and I kind of traded out Jesus for Hickson. I thought the dude was literally like a god walking the earth, and that he could do no wrong. And I'm interested to hear why you would say that he's the most amazing person you've ever met. I've tempered my, I still look at him and I think he's a very actualized human being. But as with anyone else, myself included, I also know that he's flawed and that he is only human. And I'd love to know your, I'd love to get some feedback from you, and also yep. your own insights into that.
Well, you know, it's interesting how you made the progression from organized religion and then into Hickson, which it seems as if you're following a similar archetype of a hero model in terms of, you know, from Jesus to Hickson. And of course, Hickson's definitely an actualized human being, and you know, much like all of us, and all of us have flaws. It's just that when you've done something like what he's done in terms of, so he lives his entire life is fighting and fighting challenge matches from an early age all the way up until he's an adult and into his 30s. And then he comes to America and he continues that cycle and continues competing and continues teaching. And I think when you've gone through something as difficult as jiu-jitsu, and not just as difficult in jiu-jitsu in the sense of how we know it in the modern day, but as difficult as what? You could be walking down the street and you have to fight somebody to defend the honor of your family, which then in turn defends the honor of the art and defends the honor of your students. I think living that type of a lifestyle turns you into a human being that's almost transcendent in a way. And dealing with Hickson and meeting him and learning from him, you know, you realize that, wow, you have, I've just been in contact with a person who almost in every sense of the way, and from my perspective of jiu-jitsu, is perfect in the physical sense. And then in the mental sense, the way he sees the art and the way he's conceptualized the art and the truth that he's found in the art is on another planet. So, and then you have the spiritual side of Hickson, which, so he's the perfect kind of triad of a human being in jiu-jitsu, which is the mental, physical, and spiritual, I guess you could say martial arts. So, you know, with that and with in terms of my view of the world and what I enjoy and how I choose to live my life and move forward in my life, he is the pinnacle of a human and the pinnacle of a person to model myself after. Now, whether or not, you know, he's obviously he's not a perfect individual, like in the sense you would think of a god, but as far as somebody who you could kind of strive to be in a virtuous sense, I don't think it could really get much better.
Yeah, powerful. It's you really broke it down well there. And I think you probably couldn't go wrong modeling yourself on him. I do, however, have my reservations about, you know, I love jiu-jitsu. Eddie, I'm going to be straight up. I love jiu-jitsu. I think about it all the time. It is the thing that does so much for me. And it's caused so much growth in my life and made so many fantastic connections and allowed me to live this amazing life that I have. But at the same time, I'm very hesitant to become one of those people who devotes everything to one single thing. All his mental energy, all his spiritual energy, all his physical energy, because I don't think that's what we're here for. And I think that life is an all-you-can-eat buffet of cool stuff, right? And
yeah.
If you choose one dish and you just like, this is it, there's nothing else, you can go deep into that dish and you can really get the nuances of the flavor, but you're going to be missing out on other stuff. And I think it comes with a bunch of different treacherous things that when you love that, when you take that focus and you go so deep into something, you commit yourself so fully, there's a lot of other treacherous things surrounding it. And I look at myself as that young kid who is like 20, and I literally thought Hickson could breathe underwater, bro. If you had told me he could breathe underwater, I would have believed you. Mm-hmm. And I look at that kid and I just want to give him a bitch slap. I'm going to be like, wake the fuck up, dude. Like, wake the fuck up. Like, really. Like,
yeah.
And you know, there's a big thing. I wrote an article about jiu-jitsu saying, is jiu-jitsu a cult? And I was trying to get people to start thinking and realizing that, like, just because you're good at jiu-jitsu doesn't mean you're necessarily a good human being. And again, right. When I say that, I'm not saying that that means a person like Hickson is a bad human being, because I don't believe that at all. I think he's a fantastic character. But I think that we have to be very careful to realize that even though it is such a powerful and wonderful and complex thing, like, don't become that guy. Like, another example is, like, I like video games, bro. I love video games. I don't play them as much as I used to because I just got too much stuff going on. But every now and then I'll go on the web and look up something on video games or the latest news or whatever. And they're these, like, guys who have devoted their whole life to video games. And it's kind of like turns it into something kind of creepy and weird, if that makes sense. And,
I can see where you're going with that. And I don't think that, I think really as a person, I think it's about finding responsibility, which is a scary thing to face with, or a scary thing for people to get. I remember I just had my first child, my wife, and, you know, it was a scary thing to deal with, because you're leaving one segment of your life and you're moving into another segment of your life, and you realize that you're going to give up so much, and you feel like you're going to be, that part of you is going to die in a way. But in a way, I think that some of you has to die in order to keep going and to become reborn in a way. But in terms of the idea with Hickson and the idea with devoting yourself to something, I think that when everybody finds their meaning, when they find something that's worth devoting themselves to, that in a sense, in the grand schemes, is worth all of the suffering it takes to get through it. So maybe it's video games for somebody else. Maybe they want to dive so deep into it because who knows, it'd be difficult to get down to the actual psychological sense of it, but they want to get into it because they love it so much, and it's a struggle, and it's every human emotion that they can have maybe takes them, they go through that when they play a video game. So for me, in terms of devoting myself to something, I don't look at anybody really as the archetypal model of a perfect human being, but I do look at different types of people, and I can strive to be similar to them in a virtuous sense based off of who they are. So for me with Hickson, he is the archetype of a perfect jiu-jitsu being. So that's who I strive to be. And then in other segments of my life, I can use other examples of things. And I think it's important to have those blueprints. All of us have them in a sense, whether we think we do or we don't. That's kind of where I've gone. So for me, jiu-jitsu has given me that meaning of, it's developed myself. It's given me the ability to socialize and communicate with people. And it's also given me a skill that I feel is very powerful that I can give back to people. So I don't see anything for me personally that could be more meaningful. And so that's where my devotion into one thing, it becomes so important to me. And yes, there's a lot of things that I can miss out on, but if I spend my life going after things that I'm missing out on, I'll just be chasing things that I'm missing out on because I'll never catch everything. So in a way, I think I found a way to accept myself through jiu-jitsu and accept the world that I live in. And at that moment, you know, once I did that, and it actually was when I retired from fighting and met my wife, it was really a point where I opened up, where my mind opened up, where my business opened up, where everything started flourishing. And I felt like it was me just realizing who I am and realizing what type of meaning I have in my life. And now it's almost as if I'm at the point where I'm like, well, I don't know what else to do. I'm too happy.
So the next question I have for you is, you just mentioned that you've been training since you were 10 years old. And I find that quite interesting because it's 20 years now, that's two, and you're about 30 years old. So that's approximately 2 years of your life, two-thirds of your life.
Yep.
And I have often questioned, one of the ways I used to beat myself up was that I used to wish that I'd started jiu-jitsu earlier. And I subsequently realized that it's probably a good thing I didn't, because there are already times when I walk a very fine line between, I walk the edge of burnout. You know, I've been living and submerged in this lifestyle for so long. And I wonder, how do you deal with that? Because from 10 years old, that's a very young age. Man, I notice, even though no one would really want to admit it, there's a lot of the Gracies that don't even train jiu-jitsu anymore. I mean, they make money from it, and they'll teach the odd seminar every now and then, but a lot of them just spend their time surfing, and they don't train, they don't compete, they kind of just, I think to them it's just become like a business, and it's not that full immersion lifestyle thing that it is for someone like perhaps you, yourself, or myself. And I guess my question is, how do you avoid that burnout?
I think a lot of it comes from, you know, how I started. I started at 10. I wasn't a Gracie, so I went into this by choice, number one. So going into it by choice and going into it because of, you know, at the time when I started, I had already gone through some severe childhood trauma and some different situations. So for me, when I saw Hoist Gracie, that was the idea of becoming that. If I could become that, I would become more powerful than anything that could ever harm me ever again in my life. So it was a deep, deep thing when I started, which I didn't realize until just recently, actually. And so that was, for me starting out, it was very easy for me to keep a one-track mind. In terms of preventing burnout, I think that you just have to figure out over time how to moderate yourself and how to control yourself and how to explore the art in different ways, because the art is really infinite. And it's impossible to become burnt out with it. And I cannot remember a point where I actually became burnt out with jiu-jitsu. I became burnt out from competition. I became burnt out from hard rolling, but I may not have been burnt out from at that same moment studying or watching or listening or talking or teaching. So I don't really see the possibility for me ever to get burnt out, because I'm always shifting and changing the way that I'm practicing or dealing with the art.
No, that's a fantastic answer. I appreciate that very much. So you came up with what I thought was a very intricate and fascinating observation on the way jiu-jitsu is moving. And you equated it to US politics. You mentioned this to me over our Facebook chat. Would you just, for our listeners, reiterate that observation of yours?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I'm studying politics a lot, and, you know, you see different sides of the aisle. Obviously, you have the left and you have the right. And generally speaking, in a very general sense, you can get a broad idea of the psychological traits or personality traits of both sides of the aisle. And you could see that happening within jiu-jitsu. You can see, let's say, a progressive side of jiu-jitsu, which is all about, you know, innovating and coming up with new things and new theories and exploring the art in different ways. And all of that has its place. And you can see the more conservative side of jiu-jitsu, where, you know, they want to keep the order and they want to keep things how they were, and they want to keep an adherence to the rules and to everything that it was built upon. So I think the balance for everybody lies somewhere in the middle, obviously, just like anything else. There's always needs to be a balance. But I see that happening now. And sometimes I worry that in a progressive sense, that if we continue moving in that progressive direction, that it will be the death of what jiu-jitsu was. And it will become an entirely almost unrecognizable art. And that's a very, very far stretch. That could be hundreds of years. But that's been the general case of society throughout time, that as things progressed away from a certain value structure, they would start to decay. And that's something that I see, you know, so it's kind of a deep thought, but, and I need to unpack it more. I need to think about it a lot more, but you could see it on multiple levels.
So when you say it's progressing or deviating away from what jiu-jitsu was, what do you feel that it was?
Well, it depends on how first, everybody's going to have their own perception of the art, and they're going to have their own preference, and they're going to have their own thing that they want to do with it. So I'll see a lot of instructors that will teach the art in a way that most instructors teach based off of their preference, which I see as a big problem if you're trying to reach a big community. Mm-hmm. If you're teaching from your preference, you're straying away from what the art is, and you're bringing it towards what you prefer or what you like. And that's fine and that's okay, but you need to say this, and you need to really, really kind of separate yourself, because I think what you have with jiu-jitsu is you have a value structure that it was built upon in terms of, let's say, going back to Japan, and then it lands in Brazil. And the Brazilian culture, I think, had a lot to do with the formulation of the art. I think there was a lot of differences, obviously. And, you know, there was a great system created. And it was a great tool for fighting, and that tool for fighting turned into a sport, and that sport turned into really a lifestyle, and it became everything that it became now when it came to America, and it exploded, and the Americans kind of put their own culture onto the art. Mm-hmm. And So now what you see is you see as it strays away from that trunk or that value structure and moves in a direction where let's say it's going further and further away from the self-defense aspect of the art. Okay, well, now it's becoming more of a sport, or it's becoming more of a, so it's a difficult thing to balance. So I guess to really what I'm trying to say is at its core, jiu-jitsu was a martial art that was rooted first for war and then for self-defense based off of the time period that they're in. And then now it's no longer really too much about self-defense in some regard, because maybe people aren't dealing with the danger or threat of self-defense as they were at a certain time. I don't know. Times change. So I just see it when it starts from self-defense, when it starts from the core that it was at, and all of the concepts of the art in terms of efficiency, in terms of leverage, in terms of angles, in terms of body mechanics. I feel it has to start there, and it has to keep that reality and keep that realistic sense of what this is and where it came from. And then we can progress the art from that. So it's kind of got to pass through that filter in my eyes. And that's my own personal opinion. I could be
interesting.
Wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's right or wrong, but I definitely don't agree with it. My own perspective, which is always shifting, is that the self-defense aspects of jiu-jitsu in the way they're traditionally trained are pretty archaic and largely irrelevant in today's society.
So that's an interesting thing, because you think about, you know, you look back at the old texts from the early 1900s where they'd have these crazy, totally unrealistic type scenarios, right? And you see that in a lot of traditional martial arts systems. So my idea of self-defense in jiu-jitsu is not from a purely technical standpoint of, let's say, a person grabs your throat with one hand. It's more of the mindset of self-defense. It's more of the idea of being prepared for the most severe and treacherous situation, which then that type of a mindset that you can create can transfer over into the sport, and then you can take it and use it however you want.
I like this idea much more, and it's more an idea of expansion of awareness, and that it's in itself. You know, I'm always saying that the jiu-jitsu is not something that you do; it's something that you are. It's an awareness that you take with you into the world. It's when you bend down to like put your shoes and socks on, you're doing it technically with awareness. You're in that moment. You know, when you walk into a strange environment that you've never been in and you get a strange feeling, it's looking for the exit or focusing and centering on your breath so that you have the best possible perception and the best chance of protecting yourself if something goes wrong. It's not about, hey, in the highly unlikely event that some guy attacks you and you're standing on a padded mat, that you can defend yourself if he puts you in a certain move and then put him in the mount position and put him in an arm lock, because that, in my mind, is just a recipe for getting yourself into big, big trouble if you try to approach potentially treacherous situations that way.
The other thing is too, you can't, like, you know, from a self-defense perspective, there's no factors where you can predict what's going to happen to you if someone grabs you and you throw them down and you armbar them, you know. And that's commonly the problem now, and where I see, you know, jiu-jitsu needing to come back kind of to its roots in a way. It's like you said, it's not in that strict vacuum like three technique series. Now, I could say that it starts from there, because I think if it starts from there, what does that give a person? Well, that gives a person a sense of empowerment. Okay, so now you take a person who's a little bit more empowered, even if it's not totally real yet. Okay, and then you take them from the most basic sense where they're empowered, and you allow them to transition through positions into a technique, which may or may not work. And then you take them from that, and you start to develop them throughout the rest of the art.
Mm-hmm. Well, what if that empowerment is based on something that is, I don't want to say false, but potentially unrealistic and downright dangerous? The example that I give is a friend of a friend was attacked recently in a small town in England, and this guy's a jiu-jitsu purple belt, and one guy attacked him, one guy stepped out of the shadows, walking in a pretty dangerous street or an alleyway or something like that, and he double-legged this guy, took him down, put him in mount position, and was just wailing on him. And this guy's buddy came running up from the side with we call it a Stanley knife in England. I don't know what it's called in the US. It's one of those box cutting knives, and slashed the dude's face from the side. And like, I think the guy, like, it took off half of his scalp and he had to have extensive plastic surgery. And to me, that's, you know, like in a system that's trying to sell you something, the guy did the exact right thing. You know,
maybe he did.
Yeah, maybe he did. Or like, I mean, he could have done another technique or another throw or whatever. Or he could have done like a Taekwondo roundhouse on the guy, or he could have turned and run. There's a million different like variations. My perspective on this is shifting. When I see some of these like knife disarms and gun disarms and like, you know, there's certain, a friend of mine says it really, really well. He's like, if you want to know how good your jiu-jitsu is, if you want to know how good your self-defense jiu-jitsu is, go to South Central one day and go pick a fight with one of those gangs. And you'll very quickly figure out if what you know works or doesn't. And that stuck with me. That was like a big wake-up call for me. I'm like, geez, what I do is, sure, I'll have a much better chance than the average untrained individual in certain scenarios. Like maybe I'm at a football match or something, and some guy starts being loud, some drunk guy, and he like, I don't know, pushes a woman or something. Then I'm confident that, yeah, I'll be able to handle that situation. But if I'm walking down a dark street in an alley and there's three dudes who are armed, or if I'm in a bar and there's like a few Hell's Angels bikers and one of them's holding a pool cue and the other one's got a gun, am I going to try to do jiu-jitsu on them? Not a fucking chance, dude. Not a chance in hell.
So that's where it becomes, and that's where I think one of the biggest problems in jiu-jitsu in the modern day is people think of self-defense and they think of the self-defense aspect of jiu-jitsu in a too simplistic form. And I think maybe that's a language barrier. Maybe it didn't get translated as well over here. Maybe people haven't thought about it enough. I don't know. But for me, the idea of self-defense is not necessarily how to disarm a pool cue, because the only way you can really learn to defend yourself is by grappling. And that's a very serious thing. That's why I don't teach. I won't. I used to do these like one-off seminar classes, like women's self-defense and things like that, where I'd show them 10 techniques and send them on their way. And I realized, I said, well, that's kind of a dangerous thing that I'm doing, because now that's where someone gets a false sense of security. So I won't teach anybody self-defense unless they're committed to mastery, because that commitment to mastery is a very, very, very infinite thing, where they're rolling and they're training and they're going through situations. Now, a situation where a person's in a dark alley, you know, you have to take behavioral things into account, that, well, you're in a dark alley and you can't predict anything that's going to happen. And it's almost like you're putting yourself in a disadvantageous position where you're not setting yourself up to be successful. Okay. So if you're walking in a weird street like that and someone comes out and attacks you,
you've already made a mistake.
Right. So we can always go back in time. And that's where I think the self-defense mindset is so important, because when you understand jiu-jitsu from a self-defense perspective, you start dealing with the reality of the potential, of the fact that and that's where you start to really become humble, because you force yourself to think about, and it's not just training, you force yourself to think about, and you force yourself to go within to situations and scenarios that you otherwise wouldn't have, and it gives you reality on the subject. And now let's say in that situation, you know, now we bring it back and we say, well, what the hell were you doing walking down that street? Well, maybe he has no other choice, right? So, okay, well, I would have a knife on me. And people say, well, you're a black belt in jiu-jitsu. Well, there could be a guy that sneaks out from the shadows and I don't know that he's there. So I need to be prepared for everything. So the self-defense mindset is not a series of self-defense is not a series of techniques. Self-defense is a way of being, and it's a way of thinking, and it's a way of walking through the world, and it's a way of seeing situations. And jiu-jitsu can give you that, because in jiu-jitsu you're playing a game of self-defense whether you think you are or not, even when you're just grappling and training in a class. And even if you've never thought about self-defense, you still are, no matter what. But the reality beyond that is understanding what to do if somebody's bigger, understanding where you are, understanding who's around you, understanding the physicality of someone who's unskilled and the spasticness. And, you know, that's from the beginning, when someone is rooted within that type of principle and concept, and then after, let's say, blue belt, they start committing to the mastery of the art, which involves all of the rolling and all of the sequences and all of the, let's say, quote unquote, sport. So now you have a well-balanced individual that has some sense of reality, but then also has that sense of counter and retaliation that jiu-jitsu and rolling and it gives you, the struggle, the resistance. Mm-hmm. But self-defense to me is more a way of being in the world. And obviously there's techniques that go along with that. And there's techniques with jiu-jitsu that are involved with that. And, you know, you could argue against some of them or not. Mm-hmm. And I think over in the grand scheme of things, it's different. You know, what we've seen for self-defense is we've seen a clinch and we've seen control on the ground. Okay. And jiu-jitsu, we've seen it. We've seen it work. It's the only thing we've really, really seen work on a mass scale. So we know that it works. But I think from the beginning, you start to see, because I see it at other schools too, just, you know, traveling the country and stuff and having friends and stuff. I'll have people come in here sometimes and they're standing and they've been doing jiu-jitsu for 2 years and they don't know how to keep their base. They don't know how to enter into a clinch. If I started hitting them in the guard, it's like I just turned their world mm-hmm. upside down. And that's a tough thing to see, because I feel like me from the beginning, I was always thinking about fighting. I was always going to fight professionally one day. That was always my goal. So when I would train, I wouldn't even tell anybody. I would be rolling and I would think about, could the person hit mm-hmm. me right now? And all of a sudden from that, I started to develop a stronger jiu-jitsu, because you start to realize that the concepts of striking, let's say, and the concepts of, you know, MMA or whatever, they fall in line with a lot of the same concepts of jiu-jitsu.
Mm. I agree.
Meaning,
I agree.
If I'm going to pass your guard, that's the same space that I need to be in to hit you in terms of weight distribution. If I'm going to submit you in the mount, I have to be able to posture up to attack your collar without putting my hands, you know, without just laying in base. And that's the same position that I would hit you from. If I was going to take you down, I have to be able to enter in close enough to get my hands on you. If I'm going to be able to flip you over from the mount, I need to be able to keep you off balance. And I need to be able to keep you not attacking me, right? So it's all the same as you get into it. And when you start with that idea of reality, and then you go through the rest of the art, that's what creates a person that's really unstoppable and invincible in my eyes.
Fair enough. And my perspective is similar to yours, but there are differences. So we could go as deep, or we could go way deeper into that conversation, and we'll probably leave it for the next episode that we do together.
Yeah.
But I appreciate your insights on it, Eddie. I really do. I'm interested to know, you've been training for so long and you've done so many matches and so many MMA fights. What is your best memory from your jiu-jitsu career up until this point? And it doesn't have to be a competitive specific memory, just something that you can think about that's been given to you from your life in jiu-jitsu, that a memory that you wouldn't trade for anything.
Wow. I've really never thought about that. I'd say, you know, my best memory so far was retiring, actually. And that was a moment where I think, you know, when I was competing, I was kind of lost in a way, and I was having a good time and I was enjoying it. And I think I had to get some stuff out of me, but it was like when I retired, it was like the floodgates opened in my heart, my soul. And it allowed me to see, and it allowed me to kind of understand everything that I've been searching for in my life. So my greatest memory is that time period of kind of ending competition and moving full steam ahead into teaching and my lifestyle now. So.
That's so interesting to me that you say that, because my relationship with jiu-jitsu and my career and what I do has also changed since I stopped competing, or I decided to focus my energies on other things. And it's been a big thing in my life as well, on a deeper level. It's interesting how all these things are tied together. And one of the things I'm working with, I was recently in Cape Town, and I was teaching a class at one of the Gracie Academies. It was a Henna and what's the other guy?
Huron.
His brother.
Huron,
yeah, like the affiliate. And Huron had written on the wall when he was at a seminar there, and he said, "Don't think about what you want. Think about what they want." And in my life, I've realized that to get to the level that I want to be, to have all the things that I want to achieve in life, and to be the best human being that I can be,
I have to, it's something I'm already doing it. It's a process that started years ago, but I've come to understand that it's not about me. And that, like, the most actualized individuals realize that it's about everyone. And when you help the whole, you help yourself as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something I'm really trying. I can feel it shifting, partly because of things like this podcast, and I'm really trying to give back. The shift isn't quite complete yet, but I can feel it shifting. So when you say something like that to me, I find that very, very interesting.
Well, it is, and it's interesting, you know, how you say that too, because I don't feel like you can really do that until you've completely gone through what you've needed to gone through. So it's interesting that you're at this point now and you feel that way, but it's almost like you have to do everything for yourself first. And then once you do that, then you can give back. And that's a big problem too, when people have not sorted themselves out. And let's say, you know, that's the classic blue belt who's trying to, you know, teach the class while you're teaching it. That's a person. It's like, no, deal with yourself first. Do your own thing, get through the art, and it'll come back around. And then when that's done, when you've gone through it and figured it out for yourself, then you can take care of your direct community. And then after you can take care of the direct community, then you can take care of more of a societal type situation. And then you can expand yourself. So that's kind of the thing that I think why retiring was so big for me, because it was the moment where I realized that I've done what I needed to do. And now I can go into a realm that's a little bit different. You know, I can start to give back. I still have to take care of myself, obviously, but I can start to give back because I'm okay. I've accepted where I am.
Wow, Eddie, that's wisdom. Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
A very honest and what I feel to be powerful answer. So Eddie, tell me, you said you're running the Hicks and Gracie Albany Cup. So it's the chapter of his new series in upstate New York. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay, could you tell me a little bit more about that? Because I don't really know much about the this new series. What is it based on? And tell me a little bit more and share it with us as well, please.
Sure. So about a year ago, Hickson approached me with the idea of doing a tournament. And he'd been doing this tournament for a long time in Japan, but he kind of wanted to create a circuit that was a little bit more expansive in its reach. And it's something that's going to be really dedicated to presenting all of the aspects of the art. So we're not going to just have, one little small piece of the art. Really, my vision, and which stems from his vision, but what I'm trying to create with it is something where a person can walk in and they can see sport jujitsu happening on all of the mats. And they can look over and they can see the self-defense tournament happening. And then they can go around the outside of the venue and see all of the exhibits and all of the vendors and so on and so forth. So the Hicks and Gracie Cup is an event that's really meant to show the modern sport, kind of also keep within it the origins and bring back the values of self-defense and promote self-defense jujitsu, which is crazy to kind of say actually out loud. But so the sport, the self-defense, and the lifestyle, really an event that's going to kind of tie all of those things together and kind of a one-stop shop. So when you come to the tournament, you're going to have the full spectrum of jujitsu everywhere you look. And the idea with the exhibitors and the vendors, they're all going to be people that are a part of the quote unquote jujitsu lifestyle, whether it's fitness, yoga, nutrition, so on and so forth. So the Hicks and Gracie Cup is really meant to kind of capture all three of those elements.
Well, that sounds really progressive. And I think I'm going to come check it out. What date is it?
It's going to be September 9th and 10th. In Albany, Albany, New York. It's about 3 hours north of New York City. It's the first one of the series. We have double elimination brackets. We have a self-defense championship, which is going to be really, really interesting and unique, which is going to cater to an element of jiu-jitsu that might not have a place to compete right now. And we're also going to be having, we have a innovative, really super, super innovative tournament software that is meant to communicate directly with the competitors. So competitors will know exactly when their match is, exactly when it's time to warm up, and so on and so forth. And they'll get text messages to their phone.
And oh, that's great.
So we have a really, really dynamic system being put in place.
That's fantastic. That sounds really cool. I'd love to see how that goes down. Well, Eddie, I've really enjoyed this conversation. The thing I can sense about you, even though
we don't necessarily share exactly the same opinions. You come across as someone who not only talks the talk, but you walk the walk when it comes to living the jiu-jitsu lifestyle. And I really appreciate and admire that. And I wish you the best of success in everything that you do. If people want to get in touch with you or find out more about your work, what's the best place for them to go to?
Sure. They can look my name up on Facebook, or they can go to my website. I'll give them three websites, actually. So EFJJA.com is my school. 5eInc.com is my consulting business for martial arts. And then, of course, go to actually today, the 26th, is going to be, or I'm not sure when this is going to air, but June 26th is going to be the registrations are going to open for the Hickson Cup. So www.hicksongracycup.com, and you can check out all the info.
Fantastic, my brother. Well, I wish you 1,000 blessings on the rest of your journey, and I hope to share the mat with you soon.
I appreciate it, and I thank you again for having me on here, and I appreciate the comments and everything that you've said, and I think that we do have a lot in common in regards to where we are in jiu-jitsu, and I think if we could talk for maybe a couple days straight, that we would find that we have a lot of common ground and less disagreements, actually.
For sure. Okay, Eddie, peace out, my man.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. I'm glad I trusted my gut on that one. It's one of the instances where it turned out to be right. What a cool guy. You can hear the passion in his voice. You can hear how dedicated and committed he is to jiu-jitsu. And I really enjoyed that conversation. He made me think about things in a different way, which is one of the main reasons I do this. I love having my existing perspectives and beliefs challenged and questioned. So that was great. Thank you so much to Eddie for coming on the show. Next week, I think there's going to be a special surprise for you guys. I'm not going to say who it is, but I think we got a big name guest on the show, and I think it's going to be fantastic. Also, as you guys know, we have a special coupon code for all you podcast listeners. If you go to store.jiu-jitsubrother.com and use the code podcast, you will get 10% off anything. That includes all of our merchandise. We've got awesome quality jiu-jitsu gis, fantastic rash guards, great belts. We've got some pretty cool jiu-jitsu t-shirts as well. And what I believe are the best jiu-jitsu instructional products on the market for everyone ranging from beginners all the way through to high-level black belts. So remember, use the code podcast at checkout and you'll get 10% off. So until next time, guys, train smart.